Welcome to Shanghai Comedy Corner Podcast, Special Chicago. This is part 3 of the panel discussion about Del Close. The question for part 3 was Del a witch? And we talk about how Shana met Del, we talk about the invocation, we also talk about the first rules of improv with the Westminster Place Three Kitchen Rules. We talk about Viola Spolin, and we also talk about how the Harold came about. Very interesting piece, hope you enjoy it.
Any other questions?
There's yeah. Over. Oh.
Nice and loud.
So the chanting and the mysticism and the altars, what was the role of that in his either the process or his art or his life? And why do we do that anymore?
Well, Del was a witch, but
Del was a pagan.
Yeah, and a witch.
Yeah, he didn't like going to a lot of the local pagan get-togethers because it was usually. Used to say a lot of middle-aged women banging their ear that had hit their heads against pipes from hitting them in the basement. So he wasn't very interested in that.
Chanting, went to a couple Coven meetings, but really the only Coven he really got into was somebody in Canada, so he couldn't really go to these meetings. But you know, he believed in this, you know, Mother Earth and that kind of thing.
Moon goddess, right?
In fact, what I was going to tell you is he called me his goddess because after I finally got him out of that apartment that I was telling you about, it caught fire like about a month later and everything was destroyed. And
I thought a boiler exploded. Yeah.
And he said, I would have been killed, my books, my cats. He goes, you are the goddess, you saved my life. And then after we got him out, we taught classes on School Street, which was like right down the block, right by Noah's house, behind Noah's house. It was a little place where we rented classrooms. There was other little things like artist studios, just like one of those buildings with all these different things going on. And we used to, at that time, we were very small, so we'd just continue our classes every 8 weeks. So people would pay there. I wasn't as organized as we are now. And so one night, Del just seemed really tired. And I said, you know what, let's just stop class tonight. We'll go to a movie. You don't have to teach tonight. We'll just cancel class. And I could call everyone. It was, again, that small. And he said, okay. And when we came back from the movie theater, we saw all these fire engines on School Street, which is the name of the place, School Street. And the place burned down, and the fire started at this artist studio right next to our studio. And the staircase, which was right in front of our building, like acted like a chimney and sucked up the fire. So we would have been killed. There was only one entrance. So once again, I saved Del from a fiery death.
So he
worshipped me as his goddess. What part did it play? I think that it was really just his religion, not more of a process. But it brought us together, I can tell you. That's how I met him. I met him at, when I was first starting, this is kind of a fun story, I was doing games. It was like comedy sports type things. There was no long form improvisation at that time, of course. And so I thought that I need to find someone like Del Close, though, to see what's next for improv, to see if you could teach some classes, to get us to the next level, because I was really tired of the small games. And I heard he was doing, it was Halloween, and I heard he was doing something at this art gallery. And so I went to the art gallery thinking I'm going to talk to this man, and there he was in his robes with candles, invoking demons, and doing this thing that was very, very scary. And I was taking TM at the time. I was meditating. You're taught to white light yourself and protect yourself from demons and stuff. So I watched him invoking these demons, and I just thought, this is just horrifying. And so I went up to him afterwards like an idiot going, I can't believe you invoked demons with all these people in the room. That was terrible. And he said, I protected the building. And I said, you can't do that. And he's like, yes, I can. And I went, and just walked out of the place. And I was so angry with myself because I thought, oh, great, I just blew it, you know. And then I saw him a few weeks later at Cross Currents, which was this place that we were performing. And I thought, well, I hear that he's always high and that he never remembers people. He's not going to remember me. He doesn't know who I am anyway. So I thought, I'll just try this again. So he was drinking coffee, and I went up to him and I said, hey, how'd you like to make $200 in some pot? I figured I'll get him through his drug habit. And he said, what do I got to do? And I said, just maybe teach 1 3-hour class. And he's like, can I do anything I want? And I said, yeah. And he said, can I invoke demons? So I said, yeah. And then he taught class, and he was just amazing. And then we went up for coffee afterwards, and I told him my goals. I think there's something else for improv. And he was like, well, maybe you're not a twin after all. Maybe we can find a way to work together. He was working on something since the 60s called The Herald, which was basically unplayable and unteachable. It was his long form. We thought maybe if we stuck some of my games in there and made a form out of it, we could change the phase of improvisation, which is what we did. But that's how we met, through his witchcraft.
We used to do, at the beginning, we used to have these invocations and stuff like that. It was just a way, an opening of sort,
right.
an opening
it's
to
the
Herald. An opening to the Herald. And everybody was game to try anything, as was Dell. And I think the reason we don't do it anymore, it didn't prove to be all that effective.
I love the invocation.
As helpful to the Herald. I mean,
I love the invocation. I disagree. I don't know. I mean, I think it takes the most banal subject and brings a level of meaning to it.
I think it gets you in the right frame of mind, but it doesn't generate as many ideas.
I think
so
we do it right.
That's
it does.
The trade-off.
I think
yeah.
we do it right. It does.
Yeah, I'm with Sharon. I think.
I've seen amazing things.
It's not done anymore because I think people are
afraid of it.
It can be a bit too serious, but it really is, to me, the best example on how to do a good opening, because it just,
and if you do
you're
it
doing
right,
art at the beginning,
and if you
yeah,
and if you do it right and you're really committed to it, it is funny, because if you're groveling on the floor to a paper cup, you know, there's just something funny about that. It's when you're not as committed to it as possible. But I've seen incredible information come out of something so boring that you wouldn't have gotten.
You are.
Okay. Well, that might be because when we first started, it might be the version we did, Dave, was like much
we had
earlier.
We openings back then. You guys remember people would walk around and
we
just do
bad openings? We did not do bad openings.
Terrible openings. Because you got, that's what the days that you just walk around and do pattern games. And you're, don't you threaten me. I have it on tape. If I'm dead, Pasquazi did it.
You guys know how all this stuff started, by the way? The Westminster Place Kitchen Rules and the...
Tell us about the Westminster Kitchen Rules.
Okay, well, this whole thing came about... First was the Compass... first was a Playwrights Theater Club, then the Compass Players, and then they decided they were going to start a West Compass, or the St. Louis Compass. And this started with Joe Henderson, Nancy Ponder, Dell, and Theodore J. Flicker. And eventually Joe Henderson left. I think that she might have been Dell's first real girlfriend, Joe Henderson. She left, and Nicholson May came out. They weren't a team back then as such, but they both got hired onto the St. Louis Compass, and Ted Flicker was directing them. What they would do was just these games. I guess David Shepard just sent down like one sheet of paper and just listed all of these different games and rule, or just games, I think. That's what they played down there at first. And then the next morning after performance, Elaine May and Ted Flicker would go over just what had happened the night before, and they'd figure out what worked and what didn't, and what they needed to use, what rules they needed and what they didn't. Then that afternoon, they would rehearse with the whole group, and then at night, they perform it all in front of the audience. So that's how that kind of got going. That all kind of blew apart, and Dell and Mike Nichols had this very contentious relationship, I'll say. And they both felt bad about it afterwards. But that was like 30 years afterwards, so it really didn't matter. And then...
So those rules, what are some examples of what those rules are?
Very basic stuff. Funny you should mention that, David. Yes.
$9.95, you can...
I'll tell you exactly. Vamp for me here
what
for a second.
What would be agreement, I'm sure?
This was stuff that was... Let's see. Oh, good. This,
yeah, and then
this right
when Dell left, Paul Dooley went down there in the second... Or the
a lot
St.
of
Louis
people
Compass.
Went back and forth. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Here it is. Three basic rules that came out of the whole thing. Never deny reality. If another actor establishes something as real, the other actors cannot negate it. Number two, take the active choice. Whenever an actor is faced with a decision during a game or a scene, the actor should always choose the one that will lead to more action. And three, it is the actor's business to justify whatever happens on stage. An actor cannot invent a character that can deny the reality of the scene by claiming it is out of character. In improvisation, your character is actually you, but with a few additional characteristics. those were the rules that everything else was kind of based on. Now, what was interesting was Viola Spolin, during the 50s primarily, she started codifying this stuff. And she came up with the same basic rules that Elaine and Ted did independently of each other. And Del always didn't, well, he never really thought that much of what Viola was doing. But he kind of came around in later years and he realized that what they were both doing was pretty much the same thing. And Del had to admit, and he later befriended her. He used to go to Viola's workshops at Second City around 1960, 61 with that whole group. Then long form actually came about in 66, 68 or so with the committee out in San Francisco. Del got
Ed Greenberg and
Del, Ed came Ed along a little later. Ed was there when they named the Herald. But what happened was Alan Meyerson was brought in to direct at Second City. Del got Alan fired from Second City. Alan went on to direct the committee. Del had to eat shit and ask Alan for a job directing. Alan said, sure, come on out. I'll hire you. And that's what happened. So Del was directing the committee. They did three different workshops. There was a musical workshop. There was Alan doing a workshop and Del doing a workshop. The three of them got together and they compared notes. And they realized there was something to this long form. And that's when the committee, so I mean, a lot of people, you know, just say Del invented long form. Well, no, he didn't, only with the committee. The committee invented long form, but Del was the one that made it his life's work.
And also, the committee did not ever do a long form improvisation as the sole entertainment for the evening. Is that correct?
They used to do it as, well, very rarely. They used to do it as the second act.
Right, but it was only as a filler while they were working out a scripted second act, right?
Yes, yeah. They operated a lot like...
Your witness.
Well, when Del got to me, what we decided to do was to take some of my games and plug it in to make it a real structure that we could teach, because otherwise it would go on and on and on for a very long time. So we took one of my games, which was actually David Sheppard's games, because he was somebody I worked with before Del, who Howard mentioned just a while ago. And one of my favorite games was The Time Dash, which was a three-part scene. And I liked that game more than anything because you'd see things progress. It wasn't just some jokey little scene. So we took like the before, during, and after a situation. So we just decided that we would make three time dashes in the body of the scene, do some kind of monologue work at the front, or put some other Improv Olympic games in there, and have some kind of a closure to kind of sum up what we were saying in this thing. And then we really came up with like a 30 to 40 minute piece, which we called like the Training Wheels Herald. So finally we had something that we could say, look, this is how you do it. And then we got to the part now that we took away the bones again, and now we can do, now we know it's about scenes returning in different spans of time and connections and callbacks, and you know, there isn't any real structure when you get really good at it. But first you should learn the structure and then take the structure away.
As I remember it now, the reason you guys came up with using the time dash as like the spine for the whole thing was because you wanted to make it idiot-proof so that we could do it.
Well, yeah, we wanted to... That was basically the idea, not idiot-proof, but a structure, like so we could teach it to people.
Idiot-friendly.
Because basically... it's basically the idea of taking a few disparate scenes and trying to find a way to weave them together and then have a story. So that's basically... He used to always say it was like a Love Boat. He said, I envisioned something like Love Boat, where you got a whole bunch of three different storylines and weaving it together. That's how he would kind of... So, well, yeah, it wasn't... for idiots, but it was just to find a way to teach it, to make it a real
to
thing.
Kind of codify it so that also because it was on the evening, one of the things that he talked about, I remember he came in and talked about Greek myth and talked about battle, and there has to be competition because only heroes there are no heroes in pedestrian ordinary life, they're only heroes in competition. And so also we had to have a, you know, so that people were doing a similar thing on an evening, because there was three heralds in a night, and this gimmick was that the audience would vote on them. But we had to have everybody kind of trying to do a similar thing.
Right.
He never used to want to have the competition element involved until he kind of came around to the idea, well, okay, the ancient Greeks, the only reason we know some of their plays is because they were in competition with each other. So that's why we started doing that.
And people would vote on who had the best teamwork, who used the suggestion, the best way, got more information, and that kind of stuff, the intelligence of the work, things that we wanted people to think about. But after a while, teams were breaking up because they were fighting with each other. And I was like, you guys are falling for the hype. This is just for the audience. We're not really competing. This is, you know. So I finally got rid of the competition because it got me so angry that teams were like hating each other. They were sitting on the other side of the building, like, because the big contest was coming up. And I'd be like, oh, my God. We're just idiots. No, forget it. We're taking away the competition.
Well, back when we were doing, you had a hard time. It was the Barons Barracudas, and then you had a hard time scraping up a second team. And we had to draft a third team from the Improv Institute.
Well, I was just starting. I was just starting out. So what happened was Second City, I had one team. And can you believe it? Now I have like over 30. I had one team. And Second City came and like hired the whole troop in one full swoop. And I was just like, are you fucking kidding me? You know, it took us so long to get this team good. And then they said, well, don't worry. We're not going to use them right away. You still have time. Then we had mixed team, Grime and Punishment, like in the
Apocalypso was.
Oh, maybe that was it. Some other team in the works. But the reason we took that other team, just for your information, was because they came to me. They begged me to let us play here because they didn't like playing
Big
with Wachowski.
Wings?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah.
They didn't like playing with Wachowski and his wife, and so they said they wanted to leave them and play here. And they were funny kids, so I put them up. Yeah. So that's why we had that team.